Trivia. The Israeli Military Intelligence Directorate does indeed have a devil's advocate office to explore alternative assumptions and worst-case scenarios so intelligence assessments don't fall victim to groupthink. But it is not called the 10th Man Doctrine like it is in the movie.
Okay. And you did mention that, too.
Yeah. At the time, this was the highest-grossing film of Brad Pitt's career.
Okay.
I don't know what's necessarily supplanted that. I mean, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood was pretty good, but I don't know if that was it or not. Brad Pitt said of his involvement in the film, "This whole thing started because I just wanted to do a film that my boys could see before they turned 18, one that would like anyways, and they love a zombie movie." So,
okay.
I also wonder if it's those kids that he had with Angelina that she says that he never had anything to do with, but that's their family drama that's, you know, out there.
That's out there. I know. I was thinking about that today. I was like, he's got family drama that he, it sounds like he just wants to move past. And I'm like, I wonder what really happened.
Yeah, it's weird. Mark Foster states that he prefers the extended unrated cut of the film. For him, it's not just about the additional blood and gore. It's about the overall intensity compared to the PG-13 rated version. He says that although he's proud of the theatrical version, he felt a bit handcuffed when he was trying to deliver the toned down PG-13 version.
I would say so.
There is a reason that horror fans don't like it when a movie is automatically, goes out with a PG-13. Imaginary that just came out from Blumhouse is a perfect example of, like, I mean, it's when you get to the end of the movie, you're like, where's the scares? Like, I mean, I don't need blood and gore, but there's certain things that you get with an R rating that, you know, the MPAA is weird. And when you try to go for a PG-13, it really, I mean, you know, it really seems to take all of the scariness out of a movie whatsoever.
It's funny. Another example, Five Nights at Freddy's. Everybody's like, where's the gore? Where's the horror? And this is the kids asking and the parents. Like,
well, it's the game even has it. It's, yes. Like, okay, so the people who play the game, who you admit are children, whether or not they should have been playing that, that's a whole other argument. But, like, what audience are you going after with this movie? Because the people who love the game expect that level of, you know, detail.
Exactly. So hopefully they come through with the next movie. But yeah, PG-13, it's just not working for us, especially in, this is an adult film. This isn't a kid film. There was no reason for this film to be PG-13. Brad Pitt's kids alone or not, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, because if he was trying to argue that he wanted this to be for his kids and they targeted PG-13 for that reason, you can watch R-rated movies with your children and you just have to be the one to, you know, basically go through and whatever parts you might have issues with, stop the movie before they happen, have your kids look away. And, you know, I mean, I know that's a lot of parenting, but, you know,
you can do it.
Before attempting the inner B-wing, Lane and Segan are given the option of an axe or a baseball bat and are told there are merits to each. This is an in-joke reference to the section of Max Brooks' Zombie Survival Guide, which discusses the best weapons to use when fighting zombies. The book considers both options superior to the gun, which Segan also uses as a backup.
Okay, but there was... Well, yeah, there's merits to each. There's merits and there's also demerits, if you will.
Yeah, well, the thing is, if you've used a gun in any of the zombie apocalypse movies, they're attracted to sound.
Yeah.
So you're bringing more of them on you. That Walking Dead makes a big point of this.
I mean, the axe and the crowbar alone, you get that stuck in somebody's skull, and you might not have enough reaction time to be able to pull that out and get it back into someone else's head, you know?
The thing is, though, with an axe, it can also serve other functions besides killing zombies.
That is true. Yes, you can break down a door or whatnot. So you can wedge a door open and just leave it there for zombies to get in that door, too. So, you know.
It can chop wood if you need be for, you know, like fires. It's got other uses. Yeah. Baseball bat, a little less so, even if Negan made that cool by wrapping barbed wire around it and calling it Lucille. So.
Oh, my goodness.
Segan actually means lieutenant in Hebrew and blessing in German.
Wow.
There you go. Customs officers in Budapest confiscated 85 prop machine guns, rifles, and pistols to be used for scenes filmed in Hungary, saying the guns could be activated by removing the screws filling the end of the barrels. Hungarian law considers the weapons to be deactivated only if the process is irreversible. The movie's weapons supervisor, Bella Gajos, commented that Hungarian police had issued a permit for the weapons. Reports claim that Brad Pitt was furious at the seizure, but producers said it didn't delay filming. At least they didn't have any situations like a certain person from the original Beetlejuice movie.
Oh, my God.
Shooting in Malta for the Jerusalem scenes was a nightmare, with two film crews working side by side, hundreds of extras, and all sorts of minor costs escalating the budget. One day, shooting had to be delayed for several hours because the caterer hadn't prepared enough food.
Oh, shit.
When work in Malta finished, the wrap-up crew found a stack of purchase orders related to the cast and extras that had been casually tossed into a desk drawer and forgotten. The amount totaled in the millions of dollars, and all the while the script still wasn't finished, which with work still being done on the third act. So this really ran them over budget to film those Jerusalem scenes, like a lot. An early script was leaked on the internet in March 2008, leading to a review by Ain't It Cool News, which called it not just a good adaptation of a difficult book, but a genre-defying piece of work that would see us all arguing whether or not the zombie movie qualifies as best picture material. A little hyperbolic there, Ain't It Cool News. The review also noted that the film appears stylistically similar to Children of Men from 2006, following Jerry Lane as he travels the post-apocalyptic world and interviews survivors of the zombie war who are starting to wonder if survival is a victory of any kind. Now, this was the early screenplay, the one that was actually like the book, mind you. It was a more literal adaptation, was substantially rewritten twice as a more epic amount of the zombie outbreak with more focus on action scenes. Despite the change, Ain't It Cool News later posted a favorable review of the altered film. So maybe I'll give Harry Knowles, if he was still at Ain't It Cool, like the benefit of the doubt here, if he was like saying that the original script, which was like the book, it actually could have probably qualified for Best Picture because of the socio-political and cultural stuff. But not the movie we got. There ain't no fucking way. After a bidding war with Leonardo DiCaprio's production company, Appian Way, Brad Pitt's Plan B Entertainment secured the screen rights to the novel in 2007.
Wow.
Brad Pitt was most intrigued by the book's geopolitical aspects, and his production company, Plan B, together with Paramount, spent $1 million on the film rights.
Okay.
Considering how much money it made, unless he got back in deal on it, I feel like Max Brooks kind of got shafted on that, even though a million.
Just a million, yeah.
Mark Forster and J. Michael Straczynski clashed throughout the writing process. Forster wanted to focus on the action, which Straczynski felt detracted from the story's main themes. He was more interested in remaining faithful to the book, focusing on the characters and the global reaction to the zombie apocalypse. Straczynski eventually was fired and replaced with Matthew Michael Carnahan, who made the film an action adventure focused on UN field specialist named Jerry Lane, dropping the book's first person accounts. Brad Pitt had already been cast as Jerry before any script was written. In fact, Pitt had read the book and obtained the rights to it and approached Foister about a possible adaptation. So a lot of cooks in the kitchen on this movie.
Oh yeah.
Which is anytime you see a writing credit and there's more than two people, there tends to be issues there.
Yeah.
Writer Max Brooks humorously commented concerning the huge difference between the novel and the movie version. I expected to hate it. I wanted to hate it, and I wanted it to suck. And then I went to see it and it didn't suck and I didn't hate it. And I specifically thought I would hate it because of the differences. But what shocked me was that it was exactly because of those differences that I didn't hate it, because it was just someone else's movie. It had nothing to do with me. I didn't have a moment of, hey, Jerry Lane will never say that comment because I didn't invent Jerry Lane. J. Michael Straczynski invented Jerry Lane, and maybe he had that moment.
Oh, my God.
Fair point.
Yeah.
Damon Lindelof and Drew Goddard rewrote the screenplay in the middle of production to create a whole new third act. The original ending for the film was very different and reportedly involved Jerry being conscripted into a Russian anti-zombie squad before finally escaping back to the U.S., Paramount executive Mark Evans, director Mark Foerster and Adam Goodman, the president of production, did not like the original cut, which has the Russian ending that culminated in a big battle between zombies and humans. All three felt that it was incoherent, abrupt, and typical Hollywood blockbuster ending that only served to surpass the Jerusalem scenes in scale. They brought in Damon Lindelof to review a rough cut film, and he suggested that they either add new scenes to improve the coherence or do a complete third act rewrite and risk additional resources plus reshoots. He recalled, so when I gave them those two roads and they sounded more interesting than Road B, I was like, to be honest with you, good luck selling that to Paramount. Fortunately, the studio agreed not to spend any additional money on finishing the movie. Special effects of the climax, but instead use it on a simpler, more personal, intention-driven ending. So all, and I want to say the third act is probably that WHO building scene, mixed with the him going back to Nova Scotia. So my favorite part of the movie is the WHO. I think that's some of the better scary moments in the movie. So good on them.
Yeah.
I mean, can you imagine what that movie would have been like if they were just done like a big, like CGI zombies, like overrunning like Russian forces? Like, I think it would have been way too bloated if they'd had that.
Yeah, I mean, we already had the Jerusalem scene. Like, we didn't need that as well. I think that the end kind of covered it pretty good, where it still showed the hordes. It still showed, you know, all of the people. But then it showed them being able to carefully walk away from the situation when they were hidden by the fact that they had, you know,
the herpes gonorrhea virus.
Yes, the herperia.
The Herperia.
Yeah.
Ed Harris and Bryan Cranston were originally cast in the movie, but both dropped out due to scheduling conflicts.
Interesting. Okay. I could see them both in this movie.
I'm trying to figure out who they would have played. Either one of them could have played the guy on the aircraft carrier that was the general that was like, if you don't do something for the boat, we've got plenty of people trying to get on here. Get, you know,
that's Ed
either
Harris.
One of them could, yeah. Either Ed Harris for sure would have played that part. Bryan Cranston, I don't know. I mean, I wonder who else in the movie. I mean, maybe he could have played like somebody in the WHO headquarters or something.
That's what
later
I was thinking,
on.
Yeah.
Several of the scenes shot in Budapest, including large scale battle with the zombies in Moscow's Red Square, were dropped from the final cut in order to water down the film's political undertones and steer it back toward a more generally friendly summer blockbuster. Okay. Remember, this was a time whenever we actually gave a damn what Russia thought, as opposed to trying to provoke them into a third world war. So there you go. The production company was looking to recruit around 2,000 local extras to play the citizens and the infected for the shoot in Glasgow as the Philadelphia backdrop. At least 3,000 people showed up at the casting call.
Wow.
The scene where Brad Pitt and his family are seen going to the neighborhood store that's being looted is actually filmed at Base Exchange Air Force at the RAF Upper Heyford, Oxfordshire, UK, or Oxfordshire, I guess is how they would say it, which was closed and decommissioned in 1992. So they basically rebuilt that just like, you know, Zack Snyder did in Dawn of the Dead to make it like look like it, you know, wasn't just abandoned for 21 years by the time that they actually went to film there. And there was actually a slogan above the store saying, "Welcome to your store," that was already missing some of its letters. And it was pretty much tailor made for the pre-apocalyptic scene, which is kind of nice when you get those little, like, you know, miraculous little, you know, coincidences.
Yeah.
The city skyline they put behind the store though was all CGI because they had to fill it in, make it look like it was part. It wasn't just like an abandoned Air Force base or whatever.
You know what's funny is that now that you mention what this store is, where it is, and how it had been abandoned, the drawer that he pulls the albuterol out of is archaic as fuck.
Oh, yeah. And that's something that almost pulled me out of the movie because if you've ever been to a pharmacy, you see a bunch of shelves that have the medicine there because it's way easier to get to build your pharmacy out.
Yes.
And to put the shelves in that are in the middle of the pharmacy that are, you know, next to the actual, you know, like where you're working so that you can get the medicine out. We don't have like drawers. If we have the drawers we have in a pharmacy, we store like pads, like written prescriptions, stuff like that. We don't put medicine in them unless it's out-of-dated medicine that's going to go back to, you know, be destroyed.
Yeah. Ours, usually has baskets, and the medications are put in by the last name of the customer that's coming to pick them up. And then I don't know where they store the actual medication. It kind of just looks, it actually looks pretty bad how I see their medication stored, just very packed. You know, I'm sure there's an organization to it, but.
It's usually alphabetical or by the brand name, and then you put the generic next to it.
Yes.
But they're all stored on shelves that are easily accessible because you are pulling, in theory, if you're doing your inventory management right, and I know this is probably more than people want to hear, but you are always using the medication that you ordered because that medication is costing you money the longer it sits there. So yes. You do not want to have it sitting somewhere out of sight, out of mind, and basically going out of date and you can't use it. So it was really weird seeing them have like those pull out drawers. I'm like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah. Even me, who's not in the field, I'm just like, that, what?
Tangent, but I can't. One of the things that pulls me out of the movie every time I see it, little thing, but like in Stephen King's The Mist movie, when they go to the pharmacy to get burn cream for the one soldier who's been burned really badly, and they go to the. And they get the burn, and this was in the book too, but I hate it. When they go to get the burn cream, they go get it out of the fridge. And in particular, and this is the funniest part, the Lantus is on the shelf, or not Lantus, but their insulin's on the shelf that they get for somebody else, room temperature. The burn cream is in the refrigerator, and neither one of those is right, because all burn creams that I've ever dealt with in my years of doing that job is always room temperature. You store it. It's good to go. You never store the burn cream and, in the fridge.
Yeah.
And then and insulin, as you well know, you don't store it at room temperature unless you want it to go bad.
I'm a bad diabetic. Now I do store my unused insulin in the fridge.
Well, that's what I mean. The unused. And the pharmacy has to store it as if it's unused because it is.
It is, yes. And then, of course, once I pop a bottle out, it just kind of sits there.
Well, that's the best way to do it because then it's cold and it hurts more. It's a whole thing, but yeah.
Yeah, the whole thing. Oh, that's a whole other topic for another day.
But anyways, that just you're right. Whenever they were pulling those drawers out, I was just like, what the fuck is this? In March 2013, it was reported that Paramount changed the scene of the film, which the characters speculate that the zombie outbreak originated in mainland China in hopes of landing a distribution deal in that country.
This is awkward.
Well, it's awkward for that reason, but it's also awkward for the fact that most illnesses originate in mainland China just because of the population density and the mix of humans and people that is more like closer than any other, really, I mean, outside of India, but I mean, somehow India doesn't really get affected as much by that. I hate when political, they were trying to do it to like, appease the Chinese, like leaders, but I hate when political correctness enters in. It's like, you can't say that that's from China, which we all went through in a certain time period. And it's like, but it came from China. Like, what do you want to say about that? Just like how they don't call monkeypox anymore. You know what they call it? Mpox. M as in Mary pox. Because it's racist to call it monkeypox.
Why?
And I sit there and think that if you make that delineation between monkeys in a certain population, you're the fucking racist.
You're the racist. I'm not thinking about that. I'm thinking monkeypox is a pox that fucking comes from literal monkeys.
Literal monkeys, yes, exactly.
Oh, my God.
Anyways, this is the second movie that Brad Pitt and David Morris have starred in together that concerns the release of a deadly virus. Their first was 12 Monkeys.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of monkeys. That is a racist-ass title.
It is.
We're going to call it 12 really M's.
This surpassed Zombieland as the highest grossing zombie film domestically and surpassed Resident Evil Afterlife as the highest grossing zombie film worldwide. It holds both records to this day.
Okay. That being said, was Resident Evil Afterlife actually good? Because there were some hit or miss ones in Resident Evil.
No.
Okay.
I'll just answer that question.
Zombieland, I can understand why they put this in this category. Resident Evil Afterlife?
Well, it was still high grossing because people liked the spectacle of those movies, even if the movies were dog shit.
That makes sense. Okay.
And Mila Jovovich, even though she's kind of, she's not thick, she's the opposite of that, but she is a pretty woman, so a lot of people like watching her
gorgeous.
Do her thing.
Gorgeous, yeah, and yeah. She's not bony skinny. She's just skinny and toned.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's a lot to say about people just going to a movie to see Mila Jovovich in tight clothing. You know, go to... Hell, I mean, the Underworld movies are pretty much shit, too. And, I mean, I watched several of them just because Kate Beckinsale, just saying. Anyways. While promoting his film, The Killer, David Fincher admitted that he was relieved the sequel didn't make it into production. The storyline would have focused on Jerry and his daughter together at the start of another zombie outbreak. But when the studio shuttered the project, Fincher said that he looked at The Last of Us TV show years later and sees how it improved upon where this sequel would have headed. So basically, the sequel to this movie that they talked about doing for years, because it did do well enough to get a sequel, was basically just going to be about Jerry and his daughter, like, traveling, you know, to the countryside, like Joel and, you know, Ellie from The Last of Us.
No. No, I'm glad they didn't do it. And they did leave this film. In the end, they left it open for another one for sure, because he's like, this isn't the end. He didn't say it was the beginning. It was like, it more than anything, he's saying this is an opportunity. But I'm like, what I gather from that is that there's probably going to be another movie.
Oh, now here's the thing. If they were to do a TV show, because this was popular enough, I mean, based upon the name, to get a sequel, would you prefer them to stick with the running zombies if the TV show was like the book, because now we're after the war that Jerry helped them fight, in theory, or would you prefer them just to not deal link to the movie whatsoever and just be like the book? I think I'd rather it just be like the book.
If they're doing a TV series, definitely like the book. Every fucking chapter could be almost an episode.
Yeah, and the thing is, too, is the fast-moving zombies would not work for that story, I don't think, because there's a lot of stuff that focuses more on the people, and you can't really focus on the people as much whenever there's, like, the whole thing about the zombies crawling on top of themselves in this movie, I mean, is what it is, but, like, if they can do that, like, where are you safe? Like, honestly.
Nope, nowhere.
Like, if you were on top of a high-rise building and they didn't just break in the front door and run up the steps like they did in the movie, they could just climb up the side by climbing on top of each other.
Climbing up things and over things. They could fucking capture fucking helicopters. That was established in this film.
Yeah, enough of them hang onto the sides to throw it off balance and then blow it up, yeah. I mean, I just don't think there's any scenario where you could take this movie and branch it off and not have it just be a big action fuck fest like it was before. I mean, you can't focus on the characters with the type of zombie that they've got.
I agree. But fortunately, these aren't realistic zombies. I mean, we've talked about realistic zombies. I hope to God they're never like this.
Well, and the thing about this movie that kills me, too, is like, okay, so, you get the ability to be able to bypass them with the camouflage. Okay, that fair, but however convoluted that is to discuss that. But, okay, so you got the Romero zombies. You can beat them with speed because, I mean, they'll always be after you and they'll never stop, but you can beat them with speed, I mean, because they're slow. You can't beat the ones in 28 Days Later with speed because they're going to outrun you because they're Olympiads. We've already discussed this. But they are humans, and they will die like humans. This movie, like, wants to give them the best of both worlds.
Oh, it's yes.
Like, they're as fast as humans, but you can't kill them unless you shoot them in the head. It's like, come on, dude. Like, seriously?
Are these zombies, in the book, are the zombies crazy fast?
No, they're Romero zombies because I think he went to the Zombie Survival Guide. Mm-hmm. He established the world that there was really Romero zombies throughout history. That's the gist of the book. And he tells you how to survive them. And then World War Z is like, okay, this culminated in like the world being overrun and now people have fought back and this is the aftermath and we're kind of see the aftermath, but it's still from the Romero zombie point of view.
Okay. And I like that.
I just don't see the way that they made these zombies. Like, I mean, there's no real way of like an average person surviving them. I don't even think, like, okay, so they had that one family at the end. If you remember, like, the montage video, looked like a little Mexican kid or something like that. Picks up, like, the virus that they're supposed to inject herself with, which I remember reading somewhere in the trivia was supposed to be a combination of bird flu. There was, like, two or three other, like, SARS and two or three other ones. Which is funny because a certain virus in 2020 was also delineated from a lot of those strains. We'll leave that be. But there, so if these families, so if these places get these drop offs, okay, how are they able to, with the helicopter flying into the area, that goes back to our whole thing about sound, and then dropping them down, how have they got enough time to inject themselves without getting just mobbed by hordes of zombies?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I didn't even think about that. That's another fucking plot hole. I did not think about that. And it was not food or anything, which they absolutely need. The kid went running. He's like, what the fuck are these?
Yeah, he lifts it up and he's like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah. And how did they not break?
Well, how did they not break? But the other thing is, too, is like, do you know, how would these people know how to give these things? You've got the average layperson. Do you know how to give vaccines? Do you know how to give your, I mean, well, you know how to give shots because you have to. But I mean, do you think let's just say like Noah, like, do you think he would be able to do that without like you telling him what he had to do?
No.
Or him reading it somewhere.
Mm-mm. But I have a feeling someone like Noah, if I were to guess, I think you've seen enough vaccines given in your life that you have an idea of what to do, and I think that they would make it work. I personally would not give a vaccine properly. I know how to give shots. Yes, I do. But, like, I'd be giving myself a vaccine in the thigh, and I feel like the most effective place is the arm.
Either one works, but there's things to it. But the thing about the movies is they're always wrong about that, too. You don't sit there and draw up, like, a shit ton of it and then sit there and, like, you know, squeeze half of it out like they always do in the movie and then go to give it. There's a certain amount that you have to give, and you have to make sure that the air bubbles are out, which means flicking it to get the air bubbles to go to the top and then press them out. There are steps.
Yes.
I mean, everybody who gives vaccine has to be trained in them. I mean, it's not complicated training, but you still have to be trained.
Yes.
And I don't understand how dropping these things to these, and some of these people have never even seen the internet. I mean, like, so how are they going to do this?
Like, yeah, that makes sense. It makes sense. It makes sense that it doesn't make sense, I should say.
The only thing I can think of is that they included like little papers that said, this is how you give this in order to, you know, like it has the
with IKEA drawings.
Yeah, but it has to be like literally drawings because they can't put it in any specific language because, some of these people might not be able to even read. So they have to go entirely off the picture. Yep. You know, there's a lot of stuff that don't make sense with all this.
There's a lot of things to pick apart, but all of that aside, are you ready to kind of give closing thoughts, or was that your closing thoughts?
No, I'm ready to give closing thoughts. I mean, I was just throwing that in there as an extra little thing that I thought about.
No, you're not wrong. You are 100% not wrong. I will start, or do you want to start?
No, you go ahead. Okay. So, I mean, because I have a general idea where I'm at with this movie. So.
Oh, yeah. I have a general idea where you're at with this movie. We picked this movie apart big time. I feel if nothing else, we have slammed this movie. But I will say this. I think this movie is an enjoyable movie to watch. There's a fault to it, though. And it's a big fault, especially with La Llorona, because this movie is not scary. I have determined last night this movie's not scary. It has
a
few gasping moments, not even jump scares, I would say. A couple of times that made me gasp. And I did have to sit up while watching this film so that I wouldn't fall asleep. One. Two, I usually sit up when I'm nervous and watching a film. I had to sit up because I couldn't see things properly. I had to have my husband turn up the brightness on it. We do have an older TV, so I'm not going to fault the movie for it. But there was so much going on in certain scenes, I just couldn't fucking understand what I was seeing. I didn't know that the virologist died because he tripped and shot himself in the head because things were happening so fast and they were panning, you know, to different scenes, showing the zombie, showing him, showing what was going on here, showing on what was going there. And so I was losing focus. So I had to literally sit up and, like, practically toothpick my eyes open to try not to miss something. So, again, this movie's on, probably going to sit and watch it. So it's a rewatch for me, which is a big deal, but it's not scary. I don't really rewatch zombie movies. So, and if it's not scary, and I watched it last night and I didn't have a bad dream.
No, I mean, the only dream that this could give you possibly is just the running from zombies. Yes. But I mean, there's other movies out there that are way better about causing that nightmare.
So that being said, while I like the film, it's just somewhere in the middle for me. So it's like, if we're talking about out of five, it's like a 2.5 to 3 out of me. Because like I said, it's good. It's enjoyable. And yes, there's lots of things to pick apart. But if you're going to sit and just eat some popcorn and watch a film, I think it's something you can get through without being too disturbed.
That's exactly where I'm at with it. It's a 2.5 to 3. I mean... And it's entirely a popcorn film. If you want to go in and you want to turn off your brain and you just want to see, fast, zombie-like action, it serves its purpose. If you think about it whatsoever, unlike when we discussed 28 Days Later, it does not hold up scrutiny whatsoever. Mm-hmm. They didn't think through a lot of the stuff. A lot of the personal interactions that we love so much between the survivors and 28 Days Later is completely lost in this movie. Because you don't have any like set survivors that you're actually following through the entire movie. Outside of his family, when we already discussed, they're the weakest links of the movie. It's just a series of new survivors that you're dealing with each time. And it doesn't hold up to any kind of like thought process. So if you just go into it and just like, I want to watch some stuff happen on screen, you get what you want out of this movie. If you try to sit there and try to get more meaning out of it or get a little bit, or even the scares out of it for a horror movie, neither one of them's there.
Yeah. And it's a little unfortunate. I don't know. It could have been such a better film. And I don't even know that following the book would have made it a greater film. Like we said, that's something that's set for a fucking TV show only. There's no way. But I don't know. I don't even know what I could suggest that would make this a better film. I do know something I could suggest. Simplicity. Again, I am seeing a pattern with myself of what scares me the most with zombie films, and it's simplicity. Night of the Living Dead, the original and the remake, they are very simple zombie films, and they're the ones that scare me damn near the most.
They're self-contained. You are with the characters. You're in their headspace. Mm-hmm. You're seeing the horror involved, come to them. It's the spectacle and the size of the situation in this movie. You're seeing it zooms in at points so that you can focus on individual things, but it's too grand to really associate with anything that's going on with it.
Yes, there's way too much going on in this film, and it was the simple, quiet moments. Like the first time they landed, I think it was Korea is where they landed. It's super dark. It's super quiet. It's late at night. You can't see a goddamn thing, but you can hear the zombies and you know they're coming. And they're not coming in hordes either.
Yeah, that's effective use of sound, by the way. That really is actually a good scene for that.
It is. Simplicity, I think, is one thing they could have done better in this film, because it was the simple, quiet moments. Again, another good scene, the WHO building.
Yeah.
It was simple. It was quiet. They said maybe 80 zombies in the area that they were going to. I forget what it was called. Plan B.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding.
Wing B. Wing B is basically what it was. Yeah.
But yeah, so... That's where I sit on this particular thing. Again, good movie. I do highly recommend, if you have not seen it, definitely watch it. And check out the book if you can. My husband read the book. I think the Reverend read the book. Like, read the physical copy. And, I mean, my husband has read that book 2 or 3 times. He loves that book. Max Brooks, he's got a way with books, even if they're not about zombies. And I'm listening to the book, and I'm enjoying that thoroughly. So...
Yeah, and he's son of Mel Brooks, which is surprising, because you wouldn't think that Mel Brooks, son, somebody who's so into comedy, would have, but like his son's got the best of both worlds, because he has the comedy in sections.
Yes.
And even in different types of comedy, mind you, it's just like there's the sarcastic, and then there's just like the, you know, the situational, like this is ridiculous that we're in this situation type comedy. But he is very effective at the horror elements of it too.
Yes. And one thing, if nothing else, Max Brook definitely, in my opinion, was successful at was horror comedy, and that was in the form of The Zombie Survival Guide.
Yeah, that's pretty. I almost wish that they could make that into, but I don't know how you'd make that into a movie. I mean, unless you had some, it was almost like the way I think they could make that in a movie is if you have somebody who is like, you know, some kind of prepper guy who has made like an internet video, kind of like, you know, let's put it in this frame. So Late Night of the Devil is supposed to be like, you know, an actual
found footage
shot. Found footage or whatever. Same thing with, Zombie Survival Guide. You have this guy who's just a, you know, redneck. It's like, I want you to buy my, you know, we could even make him Alex Jones type. It's like, I want you to make my, or watch my video on how to survive the upcoming globalist agenda, you know, and it's like, and then you have like, and the whole video is like, the, you know, him like going through like the steps that are like, you know, tips that will get, help you survive the zombie apocalypse.
I think if they made it kind of like Zombieland a little bit where, you can hear, well, I shouldn't say Zombieland, but let's say my thought in
But Zombieland does have something like that because the rules that, you know, Columbus has, they're almost like a zombie survival guide.
Yes. And, it's, but you know, are there scenes, what I'm thinking in my head is there's a scene where you see him talking about using an axe or a bat or a machete, and it actually physically shows him in action and it pauses and you hear the narrator, which is the person who's explaining to you how to survive, this is why you want to use this, or this is why you don't want to use this, and then it shows it in action, like it stops pausing, it goes back into the action of showing the weapon in use, and that's how you kind of get your scenes.
That's like the Zombie Land scenes where he talks about the zombie kill of the week or whatever.
Yes.
And it, you know, and then it cuts away and it's like Mrs. Knickerbocker or whatever, and she drops the piano down on one of them, you know?
Okay,
it's
there, like, you go. So something similar, obviously we don't want to make it identical to Zombieland, but I feel like that's a good way to get the description of the book and how you're surviving a zombie apocalypse, you know?
I mean, that way would work, but also like if you went to found footage like I was talking about, you could have the scenes where he's got like footage that he escaped from the military, or that he, you know, intercepted from the military, where it shows actual zombies, you know, that were out in the world that we've been lied to about or whatever.
Yes.
And it's like you could play up the conspiracy angle of it and kind of go that route or whatever.
I think there's a lot of things you could do. I don't know if he's ever been approached by that for that or not, but I personally think that book was a big hit. I loved it.
But World War Z takes it to a whole new level, and like I said, the problem with it is the name. If you so simplicity, I was thinking the same thing you were. Like if you would have focused on one region and like how the people survived the zombie war, but because that's all you can really do in a movie is like focus on one area. But the problem is the name implies you need to see the global effects of this. So if you focus on one area, if it's not part of a TV series, then it's not living up to its name. It's like, okay, we've just got another zombie movie about these survivors and podunk whatever. And they're, you know, when they're trying to, you know, I mean, you can have scenes where they're like seeing like, you know, flashes of what's going on in other places through, you know, like what's functioning the internet or whatever, but it doesn't live up to the name. You're not, it's not a world war, you know?
Yeah. If you're not reading Max Brooks books, God damn it. he is a good author. He has done a variation of books. Obviously he's got a guide style book, which is not a conventional book. He's got an actual chapter book, which is World War Z and others like it. He's also got a graphic novel, which is a graphic novel but in the form of a book. And he's got these all these different styles that he has accomplished, in my opinion, because I've read a few of his books. And now he's got a movie that's out, but it's not his movie, it's just attached to his name. And I think it just goes to show that he has that selling power. He definitely has he has a talent that could be expanded upon.
Yeah, and I'm not looked to see what his, like, he's written in the last little bit. I mean, it's been a little while since World War Z obviously came out, but I think he came out so strong out the gate that it's kind of hard, you know, to, follow that up. I mean, Zombie Survival Guide was, like, pretty unanimously praised, and then he came out World War Z, and everybody was like, oh, shit, this is pretty good, too.
Yeah, he's got quite a few books. A lot of them look like graphic novels. One of the graphic novels I read was it was a true story, and it was about the Harlem Hellfighters, and I believe that is what the book is called. But he's got a shit ton of books. And I'm interested in reading a lot of them. He's got a few Minecraft books out, which is insane.
Well, it's kind of funny that he would go for Minecraft because the creepers are basically zombies. So it's like
pretty
he's
much,
stepping
yeah.
back into that.
Yeah. Oh, well, and they have actual zombies in Minecraft too, not just the creepers.
Okay. Okay.
So yeah, it's pretty funny.
But yeah, I agree on this movie. It's 50% to 60% or somewhere in that range at best. I mean, it might not even get up to 3, I mean, out of 5, because that's like what? I mean, you're getting close to like 70% at that point. I don't even know if it would make it up that high. It's fine for what it is, but it's definitely one of the weakest big budget movies we've seen in this so far. I mean, you can forgive a lot of stuff in independent movies, but whenever they get this big of a budget, you start to like, you know, it's a lot easier to pick them apart because it's like, you had the money. Like, what did you do with it? What are you showing for that money?
Yeah, and that's the hard part. I think if nothing else, all I'm asking you now with your zombie movies is fucking keep it simple, stupid, you know?
It's the same thing with just like Hollywood in general right now, though. I mean, like the budgets are super inflated. Like just came out that new Joker sequel that's coming out.
Oh God, it sounds worse and worse.
Yeah, it's there's every time they announce something about it, it sounds worse than the time before. And now it's like it's well over $100,000 on its budget, and it's like, why? You don't need that movie to be that like bloated. Like, I mean, it's literally Lady Gaga and him singing and dancing, which is weird in its own right, and it's hard to sell. So how in the fuck are you going to make, like, I mean, that budget worthwhile? I mean, there's no reason for that.
I'm not even interested. I still haven't seen Joaquin Phoenix's Joker, the first one, and I heard that thing is just a fucking masterpiece. And now I really absolutely do not want to see this upcoming one. I might, depending on how much I like the first one. I don't know if you're going to see it just to fucking say that you saw it.
I don't know. I'm not going to watch it in the theater.
I'm not paying to watch it in the theater. And it's a musical. You know your girl's going to struggle.
It'll be on HBO Max. I mean, they'll dump it on there pretty quick after it bombs in the theater because I just don't see it doing well. And I mean, the more that they move away from the original content, because the first movie was smart.
Yeah,
and it had like it was a personal story, simple like you said, but it was like about mental health and like, you know, that's, and it had a lot of like parallels to like, you know, what it's like to have, you know, mental health issues and American society, about how we don't really focus on them and then we don't give support to anybody that has them to be able to treat it effectively. And it was very smart. What's the second one? It's like some kind of I don't like, you know, Chicago style like dance thing where it's like, and what are they going to bring up in that that's going to improve upon the first movie at all?
For that story, I don't see a musical working.
I mean, if it's either so lighthearted that it totally removes it from the point, or it's, or there's a darkness there behind the singing dancing, and if they do that right, then maybe. But like, it, you know, like Zack Snyder obviously couldn't pull that off with Sucker Punch. I mean, there was all this bad stuff that was happening to that girl while the you know, all the crap was going on. And like, you know, and that movie is just a fucking mess.
Do we have a zombie musical? So, that'd be funny.
One Set at Christmas. That would be pretty funny.
Oh God. Yes. that was a musical.
But anyways, so Not the greatest movie, this one isn't. I didn't think it would be, like, just the whole concept of it. It was more enjoyable than I expected it to be, though, because when it first came out, I refused to watch this movie, so I'll give it that.
Mark your calendars, everybody, on this day. It was the Reverend's first time watching this for the show, and it's always La Llorona that is watching it for the first time for the show, so it's rare.
I really hope it's not your first time watching either Shaun of the Dead or Zombieland when we have to cover that next, or when we do cover that next. It's not a have to. I just love those movies, but
it's going to be my first time watching it all the way through.
Which one?
Maybe both of them. Am I going to get in trouble if it's both? Are you going to yell at me?
No, I mean, I'm if it's your first time seeing them, it's actually, I've gone to the other side of this. You get to experience the joys of movies that,
yes,
you know.
I've seen them, but only with the hubby and the kids watching them, or my husband. He's watched Shaun of the Dead multiple times. So I've seen it. I've seen a chunk of them. I just not have watched it from beginning to end.
Okay.
So, and I've seen some really good parts of Shaun of the Dead. Actually, I can't tell you a part that I seen that I didn't like. I'll let you know that when I, you know, watch it all the way through. If, like, I watch it and I was like, oh, well, I like this, this, and this. But when I finally got to see the whole thing, I didn't like this. I don't think that's going to happen. Not with the kind of comedy that's involved with that film.
I don't know if I could say it about either one of them, but we'll get to that whenever. Yeah. I mean, I'm very biased because both those movies are more than just rewatches. They're yearly, like, yes. I have to see them at least one time.
Yeah. And then Zombieland, same thing. I've seen parts of it. I will say this. There were more scary scenes in those films, actual literal jump scares, than there were in this movie.
They're in both films, mm-hmm. There's scarier moments. And that's why they're good horror comedies, because they actually, yes, have the scares.
Exactly. So look it, folks. I may not have watched the film all the way through, but I have enough knowledge of them that I'm like, I seen what I've seen and I like compared to what I watched today, or not today, but what we reviewed today. And again, World War Z is not a bad movie. I'm not going to say, because there's worse zombie films out there for sure.
Oh, well, if you start delving into the, yes, like the independent movies that are on Tubi, you're going to see some shit that's like, yes, I wish I hadn't wasted my time on that whatsoever.
Yeah, so I think we're going to be okay. I think this film, it's a we'll say it's a good film. It's an okay film, so.
It's okay. I wouldn't say good. It's okay.
Yeah. Well, there's so much. There's amazing films, and it's not anywhere near that, so.
No, it just happens to be sandwiched between two amazing films, between 28 Days Later, and in my opinion, Shaun of the Dead, when we get to it the next episode. This one was unfortunately wedged between two prime, yeah, examples of how to do a movie right, and this one didn't. So
it tried. At least you tried.
It was, I guess it was worth Brad Pitt's money, because he did make a profit on it. Yeah. So we'll give him that.
Okay, yeah, he did. A huge profit, actually.
All right, folks. With that, peace be with you.
And with your spirit.